We are in the third week of our series called Faith in an Anxious World. And as we've looked the last couple of weeks, we're just trying to help all of us come to a better understanding of what to do with anxious feelings. And partly we're trying to look at it from through the lens of our young people. And so we're leaning into some dialogue that's insightful, that gives us a perspective of how some of our young people see the current culture and the current times. And we know that the anxiety, as we've talked the last 2 weeks, is really, it's part of just being human. And there is a way that we can handle it, but we also know that sometimes we need to handle it in the context of community, and so we need to lean on each other. And in this time, as we come out of COVID and lockdown, we need to begin to think about what that looks like together. And we've encouraged you the last couple of weeks to, you know, increase your circle of friends around you, so that you can have people that you can share life with and share those moments when you're feeling a little anxious. And so this morning, let's take a look at, again, what some of our young adults think about living in a time with such anxiety.
I think for me, it was realizing that, like, in certain situations that I didn't have the tools to properly combat it. And so when I would get anxious, I would just have to ride it or just, you know, be consumed by it. And that would be really hard.
I was having a hard time just even going to school and making it through the day. And my mom wasn't sure what to do either.
I have really bad flying anxiety and people will be like, oh, like just take a nap, go to sleep or something. But it's like, I can't do that because I'm so anxious.
Sometimes we experience anxiety that makes it harder to perform our best. Anxiety that is out of proportion to the source of stress we experience leaves us feeling overwhelmed or stuck. When these feelings become more than we can handle on our own, it's okay to seek professional help.
Can I talk about my own experience? So I just did a Google search and looked up therapists near me, or Christian therapists near me, because I wanted a Christian therapist. But then also I contacted a friend whose church had like a directory of resources in the area, and it happened that the Google search was also one of the resources that the church offered. So that's how I found therapy.
A couple of years ago, there was this really big stigma of Black women specifically going to therapy. We were painted as this picture of, no, you are the superhero, you're the strong woman, you don't need this, you don't need this, you can do this. I had a really crazy moment happen, and I'd called my mom, and I was crying my eyes out, and I was like, Mom, I think I need to go to therapy. And she was like, great. Without me even knowing, my mom, early in my childhood, actually went to therapy.
For me, I asked a family friend who was a therapist, who's like connected with the network, and she had a contact, and so I ended up making an appointment with that guy, and I really liked him.
So my very first experience of therapy, I didn't like, because it felt very like, it felt a little stuffy, and I didn't feel comfortable.
I got lucky and I stuck with the first person I was given. I mean, I remember the first couple sessions being like, you know, let's get to know you. Therapy, in a lot of ways, is about giving you tools.
At first, I was very, very nervous. We had like a consultation. I was like, oh my gosh, what do I need to wear? What do I have to say? What questions do I need to bring in? But immediately when I got into the room, I felt like this just weight dropped off of me.
I felt relieved. I felt like I was finally gonna be able to understand what I go through and like get the tools necessary to combat it, because I was really beat down by like what I was going through.
I was 17 when I first started seeing a therapist, and it is one of the most life-changing things that could have happened to me at that time, for insight, for healing, for just hope for the future.
Yeah, therapy saved my life. And allowed me to grow, allow me to change, and allow me to accept the things that I had in me that I did not feel like I could have accepted without it. So it truly saved my life. It's okay to ask for help. It's okay to get help.
Commit to it and you'll be in a better place than you were How were so many days ago, hours ago, weeks ago? Sarah.
I had such a hard time in middle school and in high school. I had so much anxiety, and from going to therapy, it changed my life, and I now live a life I never knew was possible for myself. I'm so grateful for that, and I want everyone to know that that's possible for them, and you're not alone, and you're never alone, and there's always someone that you can talk to, always, always.
If you have a friend that's in therapy, I would say the best thing you can do is just support them. Don't try to belittle them. Don't say, oh, you don't need this. Like, say, like, you're doing the right thing, or, like, you know, you're doing something that's going to really help you. That goes a long way.
I had a lot of friends who wanted to, you know, get in there with me, which was great at certain moments of that time. Give them space if they need space.
What works for you might not work for your best friend, even if you're similar in every other way.
If they want to talk about it, be a listening ear. Especially with men in American society, it's really hard to talk about that stuff. And so when you do, like, it becomes more of a normal conversation. It's good, like, you know, it destigmatizes it.
And you can see just the realities of how our young people see their own circumstances, that they just need to be encouraged. And to be honest, we all need to be encouraged. And so I want to look at a story out of Scripture because of thinking about how do we live life in an anxious world. Last week, we looked at that God designed us to be in relationship, right? And the circle of friends that we can have around us. And when we experience good times, there are also bad times that follow. And even with people at our side, sometimes life can hand us difficulties that can be totally overwhelming and even seem hopeless. And so today we're going to talk about two hopeless situations from a story in the Scripture and see how Jesus helped those individuals deal with the difficulties. So here is the story out of Luke chapter 8. When Jesus returned, the crowd welcomed him, for they had been waiting for him. A man named Jairus, who was a synagogue leader, came and fell at Jesus' feet, and he pleaded with Jesus to come to his house because his only daughter, a 12-year-old, was dying. As Jesus moved forward, he faced smothering crowds. A woman was there who had been bleeding for 12 years. She had spent her entire livelihood on doctors, but no one could heal her. She came up behind Jesus, him, and touched the hem of his clothes, and at once her bleeding stopped. And then, "Who touched me?" Jesus asked. When everyone denied it, Peter said, "Master, the crowds are surrounding you and they're pressing in on you." But Jesus said, "Someone touched me. I know the power has gone out from me." And when the woman saw that she couldn't escape notice, she came trembling and fell before Jesus. In front of everyone, she explained why she had touched him and how she had been immediately healed. "Daughter, your faith has healed you," Jesus said. "Go in peace." While Jesus was still speaking, someone came up from the synagogue's leader's house, saying to Jairus, "Your daughter has died. Don't bother the teacher any longer." When Jesus heard this, he responded, "Don't be afraid. Just keep trusting, and she will be healed." And when he came to the house, he didn't allow anyone to enter with him except Peter, John, and James, and the child's father and mother. They were all crying and mourning for her. But Jesus said, "Don't cry. She isn't dead. She's only sleeping." They laughed at him because they knew she was dead. Taking her hand, Jesus called out, "Child, get up." Her life returned and she got up at once, and he directed them to give her something to eat. Her parents were beside themselves with joy, but he ordered them to tell no one what had happened. So here in Luke 8, we have two people who are in hopeless situations. We have a woman who's been sick for 12 years, and then we have a girl who's just died. Seems pretty extreme, right? And yet, there are some differences in the circumstances, and I want us to see that. First of all, it's interesting, the woman is completely alone. She's surrounded by a crowd of strangers. And the truth is, we never learn her name. And yet, the girl has family all around her and is clearly loved. But in both of these stories, both these individual stories, they are disconnected from the other people by something they can't control. which is their health. And we know by the story here that Jesus is on his way somewhere else. The crowd wants to get where it's going. But what's interesting is that Jesus literally stops in his tracks for both this woman and for the girl. Now, wherever he's going, it's not as important right now to Jesus as the people that are right there in front of him. He's not too busy to stop and notice the woman no one else seemed to have time for. He doesn't even overlook the girl everyone else has said has been given up for dead. Of the many things that we can observe and see in this passage, here's some things we need to see and really understand and recognize. First of all, no matter how old a person is, no matter how hopeless things seem, no matter what everyone else thinks, when we're hurting, we're Jesus' top priority. And I want you to think about that. Although we know the woman had been suffering for a long time, as long as the girl has been alive, actually, there's no mention of her family or her friends. And in this story, we're not even given a name or place she's from. She's completely anonymous. And so maybe her bleeding condition actually forced her to avoid Jewish society because of the purity rules that come out of the Old Testament about not touching someone when they're bleeding. Or maybe she was self-conscious and she just pushed people away. We're not quite sure. Either way, the woman had to make the tough choice to step out of her silent struggle, no matter how helpless she felt, and go for help. And what happens? She's physically healed the instant she touches Jesus' robe. And what's interesting here is that he clearly isn't content for the woman just to walk away alone. And so we need to see that physical healing isn't going to solve all of her problems. It's when the woman connects and talks with Jesus that she experiences what we would call true peace. I mean, look at the woman's response to her physical healing here in verses 47 and 48. When the woman saw that she couldn't escape notice, she came trembling and fell before Jesus. In front of everyone, she explained why she had touched him and how she had been immediately healed. And then Jesus says what? Daughter, your faith has healed you. Jesus said, go in peace. So here's a question. Why did she stay quiet when she was healed? I mean, how would you have responded? Think about that for a moment. Maybe even put your answer in the chat. What are some of the reasons you can think of that the woman might not have jumped and shouted for joy, like when others were healed by Jesus? How would you have responded if you had been healed without even having to speak to Jesus? Now, the other story, we have this girl who has a family and she has a home. She has servants, and we even know her father's name. And we know, too, that he's an important person in town. And this young girl is valued in society. Yet there are some similarities between the way people react each time Jesus stops, right? Here in verse 45 and in verse 49, Jesus says, who touched me? When everyone denied it, Peter said, Master, the crowds are surrounding you and pressing in on you. And then verse 49, while Jesus was still speaking, someone came from the synagogue leader's house saying to Jairus, your daughter has died. Don't bother the teacher any longer. How did the people react to the sick woman and to the girl's father, to Jairus? I mean, often the world around us, even those that are close to us, our family and our friends, they can actually miss a cue for them to stop and pay attention to us. We can all get distracted by our own busyness or by what the world or our culture says is important. And we cannot see how someone near us is feeling. And so in both the woman's story and in the girl's story, Jesus has to remind even his closest friends, his followers, the disciples, that people are the most important priority. Both the sick woman and the dead girl's father needed to leave their homes and go for help. And the truth for us is that sometimes we have to stop in our own tracks and reach out for help. Now, when we experience anxiety, the same anxiety over and over again, if we try to ignore it instead of listening to it, it can really have a very terrible and negative effect on our own person. When we experience the same anxiety over and over again, or if we try to ignore what's going on instead of listening to why the anxiety is there, we can eventually begin to lose focus and to even lose hope. And ultimately, unhealthy anxiety that goes unaddressed can lead to depression. And when we're depressed, most of us want to be alone and we isolate ourselves. And it could become a cycle that we can't break on our own. I mean, think about this. What would happen if instead of keeping things to ourselves in these moments, when we feel hopeless, we actually reached out for help instead? And so even though our feelings may make us feel vulnerable and that maybe we want to be alone, it's really important that we push through and actually get out the door, literally maybe, and reach out for help. And just like the sick woman and the girl's fathers did in the story. So I want us to see, we're going to lean into just a simple practice here to understand that there's three simple things we can do. And the first is really simply to breathe, just to stop and slow ourselves down when we're feeling really anxious. Sometimes settling our body and mind is really hard to do, especially when we have a lot going on. And one technique that we can use to focus is our breathing. When we breathe slowly and deeply, we let our body and souls know that it's okay to relax and to rest in God's presence. And I know it may sound simple, but it actually, because we all know how to breathe, but it's actually something that we have to sort of be intentional with. I know from riding my bike, when I lean into it and I've really pushed myself and I need oxygen for when I'm climbing a hill, sometimes you just start breathing and you just breathe into your nose and then you exhale out your nose just because of the way we tend to do it. But those that have developed certain good habits, you actually breathe in through your nose and out through your mouth, and you actually take a moment to let the oxygen that you've breathed in settle in your lungs before you exhale. And so that you get the full benefit of the breath that you're taking. But, you know, it's interesting. I don't know if you've ever noticed, but when you have a strong feeling like being anxious, your heart actually starts to beat faster, right? And all your heart is trying to do is its job. And so when you start to breathe more deeply, your heart gets more oxygen and doesn't have to work as hard. And this amazing thing then happens when your heart slows down and lets your brain know that you aren't in danger anymore. It's a really simple but powerful way to trick your body and brain to shift gears and to get into a mode of relaxation. It can actually be a bit strange at first, but learning how to breathe with your belly instead of your chest can also be very helpful, you know, from your diaphragm. All you have to do is slowly take 3 seconds to breathe in through your nose, making sure you fill your belly with air. And then 3 seconds to slowly breathe out through your mouth. And as you continue to breathe deep and slow, you can begin to take a moment to simply notice God's presence with each breath that you take. Now, I know breathing is rather something that's obvious. There's actually a science behind the power of stopping to take a few breaths. It can actually make the difference between feeling completely overwhelmed and being able to cope with the moment. Okay, so we've talked about breathing. Now, 2, we want to remember that you don't ever have to handle feelings or anxiety or sadness or depression on your own. Part of the whole reason we're doing this series is to remind all of us that there are people around us, to help everyone around us to know just how to be healthy mentally, and to know that we all have a circle of support around us, family members, parents, medical professionals, pastors, friends at church, all who are ready to listen and help. And the third point is something we just need to say. If you ever feel like harming yourself, you need to pick up the phone and reach out for help. I mean, we know that suicide is currently the second leading cause of death among young people, ages 10 to 24. It's estimated that 2 out of every 3 young people who experience suicidal thoughts don't even ever get help. And so as we sort of pull together this message of how to live life in a hurting world, we first need to know by looking around that we can, that there are professionals we can reach out to, even the National Suicide Hotline. Sometimes we're concerned not for ourselves, but maybe for a friend. And if you've ever worried that a friend might hurt themselves, it's time to reach out for help too. Don't try to carry the burden by yourself. You can call the same hotline or call 911 or talk to a family friend. So at this point, I want to just bring in a friend we've had here before, Jerry Strassbaugh, Dr. Jerry Strassbaugh from Appleseed Mental Health Clinic. And Jerry's a good friend, and just would like to ask him some questions. Thank you, Jerry, for just giving some insight here. I mean, we talked a while back about just dealing with all the things that we've been in under this COVID season. But, you know, I guess the question is, as we think about anxiety and particularly how should someone know they should reach out and ask for help? If it's like, you know, what are some of the indicators that should reach to a professional, not just a family member, but somebody that's actually trained?
Okay, sure. Yeah, well, you know, as we've discussed, anxiety is part of life. And so it's normal to have times of more stress and less stress in your life. And it's important to have just regular everyday coping skills that we use, things like exercise and talking to our friends and creative outlets that help us manage our anxiety. And when we're more anxious, we need to use more coping skills. But there certainly can come times in our life when we're experiencing greater amounts of anxiety. And so when we start to find that, you know, we're having trouble sleeping, or maybe our appetite is affected in that a couple of different ways. One, we eat a lot more, or we just aren't hungry at all, and so it's affecting our eating habits. Or maybe we're just feeling more and more sort of hopeless, like no matter what I do, I can't get out of this rut, or the situation's not going to get better. We just don't feel like we have any agency to actually impact our lives. Or we just are carrying a lot of anger and we can't shake it. You know, those are times when you may want to then think, okay, my regular everyday coping skills aren't working, and I may need to reach out to talk to somebody who has a little bit more expertise or outside, just an outside opinion to really help me think through what to do differently.
I mean, how to reach out to somebody. I mean, even describe the experience. I think, you know, if people think of, you know, going to a doctor, very sterile and very impersonal, and yet when you're reaching out to somebody that's a trained counselor, how is that different, do you think?
So if you're going to reach out to a counselor and see someone for to get help with anxiety or depression, the experience might be different. You're going to spend more time with them. Typically, if you go to see a primary care physician or someone at a medical facility, you know, you have a short amount of time, and you might even feel a little rushed to get to the point. But with a good therapist, you should have more time to really talk through what's happening. And the first visit, they may really want to delve into a lot of aspects of your life, because they may want to know what was going on, you know, several years ago in your life up till now. They may ask you about your health and about other parts of your life, just to get a full picture, to have a good understanding of all of you, because that may really help inform what they believe is going on with you. So I think it's going to be a process of more talking and a lot of listening, and them listening, you talking, maybe them asking some questions.
Sure.
But it should be a comfortable experience. It should be a time when you feel like you can just relax a little bit and be at ease and really just open up. Because the session should be confidential. There should be no concern about what you're talking about being shared with someone else, unless you talk about something that would make the therapist think that you're going to harm yourself or harm someone else or something like that.
You know, what do you say to someone who's hesitant to reach out for help because they're afraid of what others might think? A family member, like if I'm talking to a teenager or a young adult, for them to come to a parent and say, I am struggling with this.
Yeah.
What advice do you give to them to help to process, you know, to move into a place of healthiness?
Yeah. I think some of it is just, you know, humbling ourselves to say, hey, I can't do this on my own. And really, if you think about it spiritually, we're not designed to handle this life on our own.
Exactly.
We need the Holy Spirit. We need the body of Christ. We need our neighbors and our friends and our family to help us bear the burdens of life. Life is difficult. That's biblical. Life is difficult.
Right.
And so sometimes we just don't have a perspective that helps us maybe get into a better place. And so humble yourself. It's natural. It's normal. You'd be surprised how many people see a counselor or a therapist. It's not uncommon. Mental health therapists and counselors work really hard at providing a space that's confidential, so that, you know, your business isn't out there for everyone to see. So I would just say, make it a natural, normal part of life. It's something that many folks do, and it's something that we all need. We need other people. And sometimes we need specialized intervention, somebody who's trained in how to listen, and then also maybe to target certain kinds of interventions for us. There's more and more therapists in the area trained in specialized interventions to help with people who have past traumatic experiences. There's people specially trained in family therapy, marriage therapy. So really that specialization can help when you start to feel like the things you're doing for yourself or just talking to your family and friends isn't enough to help you get out of the rut that you're in.
And then finally, what's just a word of encouragement that you would give a person who's feeling, you know, anxious and overwhelmed?
Sure. I think the biggest thing is, especially anxiety, is very, very treatable, if you want to use that word. Anxiety is part of life. Often our life gets stressful and we go through stressful times. It's important to remember that this is just a season. This is just a time.
Yeah.
We're going to get through it. And there are things we can do to help ourselves manage it. We might not be able to eliminate the stress, but with help, with a community, with specialized interventions sometimes that are really about us and our lives, we can get through things and come through better than we started. Sometimes right. We grow through anxiety. We right. grow through difficulties, and we're actually a better person on the other side.
Right.
It's something we don't always think about when we're in the throes of sure. difficult times.
Well, and I think one of the, you know, the word you use, that it's a season, I think that really helps us see, and that you can't jump out of a season, that you have to walk through.
Absolutely.
We're getting into spring right now. The outside's looking beautiful now that it's warming up, but, you know, we just came out of winter. Mm-hmm. And so we move into summer, but it's just part of the process. So great. Yeah. Thank you. I just really value your insight on these things. And as someone who is a key ally in the community doing great work, leading an amazing team at Appleseed, I'm just grateful you can spend a few moments with us today. So thanks.
Thank you. Anytime, sir.
All right. Blessings. I really appreciate Jerry's wisdom and insight on these matters. And so I want to remind us, though, that having inner struggles doesn't mean we lack faith. All it means is that we're humans. We can grow faith even in the midst of our struggles when we want to look up, we want to look inside, and we want to look around. And so by looking up, we want to just stop and pause in the midst of all these anxious thoughts and to look up and seek God's encouragement through the Bible and by talking with others who are walking in faith. And then we want to look inside to just take a moment to reflect on where God is at work inside us. And then we want to take a good look at our own anxious world to determine when and how to ask for help, so that we can make positive changes. Sometimes our anxiety can be too much for just one person to handle. And as we talked about last week, that God has designed us to be in relationship, to be in groups and to be in families and to be part of a caring community. And so it's in those moments where we need to maybe expand our circle to even include professional helpers. And so reaching out to God and sharing honestly with others can keep us from facing anxiety alone. This week, we're going to focus the daily replay, the prayer of examine, on giving ourselves an emotional health check. We'll look at the five steps as we have the last 2 weeks to help you just center yourself on what God's doing. And this week, before we start though, let's just take a moment and practice the stillness prayer based on Psalm 46:10. God says, "Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in all the earth." And so just take a moment and let's just sit comfortably and just notice your breathing. And then just pray with me this prayer. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am. Be still and know. Be still. Be. So the first step in our daily replay, becoming aware of God's presence. Where has God been at work in your life today? Two, review the day with gratitude. Which conversations or encouraging words am I thankful for? Number three, pay attention to your emotions. Is there anything that is making me feel anxious or sad that I can talk with someone about? Four, forgive and ask for forgiveness. What forgiveness do I need to ask of God so that I can fully experience the gift of peace? And number five, look forward to tomorrow. What would I like to do differently tomorrow? Let's pray.